Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 367. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with that Pokemon Go master, Tim Elliott.
Have not played it yet. And probably won't.
And Phil Wilson. I couldn't think of anything.
What's that guy's name?
I couldn't figure out a quick diss. So
I have played it. So me.
There you go. Yeah, so have I. Anyway.
I'm as worried as Al Franken about the aspects of privacy for the game. So I probably will not play it.
Sure. Yeah, he is up in arms about that, isn't he?
He is.
You know,
It was really easy to, you know, it was bleeding data, your data out for the first few days. They have updated this thing at least twice.
Right.
So I don't know. Yes, I would be concerned as well. But
well, they Niantic just made a mistake. They didn't need full access to your Google account. And no, well, I think it was a mistake.
Well, it could be.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Do you really?
I think it's by design, and they just wanted to testing the limits, and they got caught on it, and then
could be.
Don't trust anybody.
But, this is why you appreciate things like oversight from people like Al Franken.
That's right. That's right. I think this is a good. He's right on it. He's on it, which is good.
Yeah. Well.
Uh-oh.
I really like our senators, both of them.
Yep.
And I do think Franken's doing a great job. I just, you know, he happens to jump on these things when they're really hot.
Well, it's his thing, you know.
No, I know. But it's the follow-up and the follow-through and the I support the president rather than, come on, Brock, Mr. President, you've got to stop with the encryption and the metadata and...
Yeah. Are you on first name basis with the president there?
Barack.
Yeah. Barack. Well, I drove by his house when we were in Chicago, so, you know.
Wow.
We're pals.
All right. Anyway. Did anyone go to mini demo this week?
Yes.
Good.
Well, how was it?
Yeah.
It was fine. It was fine. Now, I think that I know that MiniStar wants to put on 3 or 4 of these a year, but I think they're kind of, it's a little bit tough to come up with enough really good demos. I love the outlet. I love this week the venue was Pantages Theater, so it was nice and close downtown. But we only had five or six demos.
Yeah, but they always try to keep it to six.
Is it?
There was one time it was eight.
Okay.
But I was bummed I couldn't go.
Yeah. I think that the one thing that was the standout for me anyway was Habit Aware. Which I think, Steve, maybe you know, I think HabitAware started at IoT Hack Day, which is the bracelet that you wear that connects with your phone to remind you of a bad habit. For example, the founder's wife has an affliction of pulling her own hair out. And so you train it to alert you when you're doing this unsuspectingly or unknowingly. So I think it was a really well done presentation. It was a really well done app. I think it's in IoT device. So I liked it. It was good. So, but again, it was a nice evening. Great to see everybody again and have a couple of cold beers and watch some great demos at the Pantages Theater. So nice. Look forward to the next event.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then our pals at Twin City Business this week did an article, Twin Cities, an Emerging Tech Hub with a question mark.
Right.
And for those of us who have been in tech here a long, long, long time, there's no question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure why that is. It's like, is this guy new?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was okay. So it's CB Richard Ellis, the commercial real estate firm that was is based in Los Angeles, and they were the ones that came out with this study.
Oh,
and
to help move real estate. I see. Gotcha.
Well, no, I mean just to do. I mean, here's the whole thing. They need to rank cities based on various macro trends. And they do that because when they're working with, you know, like when Boeing moved from headquarters from Seattle to Chicago, you know, they looked at 6 different cities. And I'm sure that a firm like CBRE was you know, helping them make that decision on which city to choose based on whatever factors they needed, you know. So if you're a company that absolutely needs a tech talent pool, that's really what this was all about. So, I can see why they do it and how they do it, but it doesn't feel like it's really definitive. You know, like they didn't really have a bunch of criteria that they published.
Again, I think something like this is about
a little subjective.
Trying to move product, you know, trying to move space in Minneapolis. So, yeah. I think there's a little of that. But this is no surprise to any of us.
Yeah.
Beginning to really or really have become a tech location. So
yeah.
And how goes your effort to make Minneapolis and the Twin Cities the IoT hub of the world? How goes that?
Well, it's so far there's lots of startups and there's a lot of companies that are involved in doing a lot of different things you know, it's still moving, but it's going to be such a huge space that I really honestly believe that there's going to be segments that specific cities dominate. And of course, ours, the one that makes the most sense is anything to do with medical technology, because United Health Group's here and Medtronic and, you know, SciMed or whatever they're called now. And so, you know, there's no question that's probably going to be the default, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it's an opportunity, and I think that we're doing some great stuff in that space. So I really, I hope we can kind of build on that.
Well, so did either one of you, there's this Twin Cities Business did another article about Minnesota dethroned as CNBC's top state for business. And they scored it on 10 categories like workforce and cost of doing business and infrastructure, economy, quality of life, yada, yada, yada. And we lost ground basically, as the top state. So we're what, second now? Is that the?
I didn't see the
further down, but the big drop was the cost of doing business.
Yeah, and we're 35th in the nation.
Yeah, and they've sort of pegged it on a high taxes.
Yeah,
which is an issue. Yeah, so
well, you know, and here's the hard part. You know, as my wife and I look at, you know, what's it going to be like when we retire someday, and what are we going to do, and how much money we're going to have, and all of that. You look at the fact that Minnesota taxes Social Security, and for every dollar you pull out of your 401k, you got to give 8.5% of that to the state. And the inheritance tax also, I can't remember what it is now that you can give. Pass on without any tax, and it's many millions lower than other states. And so they're, we've seen the articles, right, from the Center for the American Experiment and all that about, you know, high net worth individuals fleeing Minnesota, taking their wealth with them. And then this state comes back with, no, that's not really happening and all of that. But yet, you know, the at some point, even though the quality of life here is really high and there's a lot of stuff going on, if it costs too much, like California costs too much in many ways, you know, is that going to slow business growth?
This is kind of interesting, though. It's not like this is new, though. So what has happened in other cities? Have other cities said, okay, well, we're going to get bigger tax breaks? To allow that to happen, to change this ranking? Because it's not like we've all of a sudden started taxing more. It's been like that for a long time.
It has been.
Right. Yeah. No, I think others have changed the environment for business to be more pro-business.
Right. Right.
So
I don't know. What do you guys think? Is it worth the trade-off?
I'm torn.
It's hard to say, actually.
I'm really torn because, you know, on the one hand, there's a family member, a shall remain nameless, who had moved here from another state, and they moved into Richfield and they bought a small Rambler in Richfield, and people were saying, well, why did you buy in Richfield? You could have bought that same house in Edina, and the schools are 10x better and all of that. The answer was, because they were coming from Arizona, the answer was, Richfield schools compared to anything in Arizona is like 300x better. And so, you know, you look at that and you realize, I mean, if you're a young family, you got kids, you can pretty much be anywhere in the Twin Cities metro area and many places outstate Minnesota where the schools and the districts are better.
Are much better, yeah.
Than the best in other states. And yep. A big part of that is yeah, we pay taxes for that. So.
Well, and value education.
And we value education, exactly.
Yep. Yes, we do.
Man.
So, I think the biggest news, I know that we kind of saved it for last, but I think one of the biggest news pieces for the week was the fact that Sport Engine sold to NBC Sports.
Big exit.
That was a big exit.
And I think one that sounds like, at least from, you know, looking at some of the headlines, like at Twin Cities Business and et cetera, it's like they've been trying to get this to happen for a long time, looking for anybody to pick this up.
Well, do you remember when we had Justin Coffenberg on the podcast? I mean, it's been a million years, but they had just maybe months earlier moved from Eau Claire into the Twin Cities. And I remember going through with one of their, he was like a director of engineering or something, but he gave me a walkthrough of their content management system. And having come out of the enterprise content management space and knowing Drupal and WordPress well, all of that, I was frankly blown away. And I know Phil, you used it, right?
Yeah, it's not a best experience for me.
Well, not the be all end all, but in terms of the functionality, and they've made the UI better and all of that over time. But it was just, I mean, it's just amazing that this small team from Eau Claire, you know, Carson Kipfer starts a web design company in his dorm room, and that morphs into Sport Engine, and then they turn around and they exit like this. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely fabulous. It's this kind of story you want when you do a startup, right?
Yeah. It's all the usual comments and quotes. Business as usual, nothing real change. We'll keep things going the same here. Blah 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 blah. You know, so that means that there's some stuff hanging on the horizon. But,
right.
But again, I congratulations. It was we're neighbors up there in Northeast, so it's always good to see them doing really well.
Yeah, how close are you guys?
They're just across the street.
Oh,
they're in the old school board building, which is now known as the Highlight Center or something.
Right.
So, it's good. Good for them. Congratulations. Talk to me about Mayo Clinic.
Well, Tim, you put this in, right, buddy?
Yeah, this is an interesting idea. Apparently, they've done this in the past where they're having a competition and they're offering prizes to startups and entrepreneurs to use Mayo technology in their offering somehow.
Oh, really?
And, it's an interesting way to get attention. And they have lots of IP, obviously, there. And getting that IP into commercialized products for, you know, medical devices and things like that. They're spiking it with having this entrepreneur in residence competition. So
that's very cool.
Yet another minute. You know, Minnesota innovation. I know it's on the healthcare space, which we don't hang out in most of the time, but it caught my eye anyway.
Well, you know, and Mayo, I'm sure you guys remember back when Mayo Medical Ventures invested in a startup called IVI Publishing, the Mayo Clinic fact book. Remember they put that on CD-ROM?
Oh, yeah.
And back
when CD-ROM was the thing.
Yeah, it was.
I remember CD-ROM.
It was like in the early 90s, or maybe it was the mid-90s, whatever. But that ultimately didn't go anywhere. They didn't sell enough of them, I'm sure. But at that point, I started to learn about some of the things that Mayo Medical Ventures was involved in, and like taking this radiology concept that they'd created, and they actually spun it out and invested in a small company in Milwaukee, which turned out to now be, I guess, one of the drivers of radiology technology. So it's things that you never hear about, you know, that they're involved in and investing in that are obviously paying dividends. So they're looking at this and saying, well, how can we kind of open this up, right?
Yep.
So that's cool. Well, and our pals at Comcast, Tim, you probably know about this. I got the press release from Dave Nyberg, who's the regional guy for PR and so on, about Comcast expanding their low-cost internet program. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's Internet Essentials. It's a $9.95 for broadband, their basic service. But it's aimed at the folks that are, you know, in the lower income area. And previously, you had to have a kid receiving, lunch, I guess it is, the school lunch program.
So that's the criteria?
Yeah, that was the criteria. Now it's just the income. So, you know, older people or other people without kids that are in that same, you know, area as far as income can now take advantage of the program.
Yeah. And what are the, if I remember correctly, the speeds are something like 6 or 7 megabit per second down and
yeah, a couple megabit per second up. It's the basic service, but it's certainly a lot better than going to the library or not being connected. So
well, and I had seen an article in City Pages about, this is a while back, I'll see if I can find it, about a guy that had a little brother. He was in the Big Brother program. And and he would, you know, he was a techie, and he would try to help the family and stuff. And they were all trying not to use their mobile phones, use up their data plans. And so based on what they were spending, he said, "Hey, look, I'll just pay for this." And he got the Internet Essentials, but they wouldn't allow him to pay for it because he didn't qualify. So he had to, he did like a debit card for the family, you know, like a credit card, debit card kind of thing, where he put money on it. And so that they could use that to pay the bill every month. And it changed their lives because Comcast came out, put a modem in with Wi-Fi. And now they could, you know, they could make phone calls over Wi-Fi and all that. It really, really changed the economics for them. Not just that they had internet access, but all of a sudden it lowered their mobile cost.
Yep.
So that was really cool. Anyway, so, well, last but not least for Minnesota Stories, I've kind of been following this a little bit, but our resident expert on all things photography and Kodak related and all that, but this is about meet the San Francisco startup creating a future for Polaroid.
Yeah, no, I thought that Polaroid, this is one that Graham flipped into our flipboard. Where we keep stories, and I liked it because, you know, you think of Polaroid as a you know, local company. I mean, they were out of Boston, but they were purchased by a local company, and now you see this big story about these guys in San Francisco that are trying to take the brand and do different things with it, mostly with apps, which makes a ton of sense. But did Polaroid get sold?
I was just going to ask you that.
I was trying to find out, figure out.
And it wasn't clear from the story if it was or not.
Well, and I was trying to figure out because this was a, who was the guy that was arrested for his Ponzi scheme that owned it?
Well, then Polaroid bought it though, right?
Oh, he did?
Yeah, they did. But it was from, God, what's his name?
I think we're all thinking the exact same person, but danged if I can remember his name.
Well, there's a link in this article that talks about, and the brand played on how tech icons Polaroid and RCA live on through licensing. So it's talking about Polaroid and who bought it and all of that, CNA marketing. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But it's cool because I remember once, again, this was back in the 90s, but I was jogging along the Charles River, and I look up, and here's this iconic Polaroid building built, in the 30s? Right on the Charles 40s. River. On the 40s? 40s, okay. Yeah. And I just, all of a sudden, because I'd read, Edwin Land's biography and all that, and I was overcome with this sense of sadness. That here's this incredibly iconic brand, you know, that was unbelievably innovative and just went away. So it's nice to see that the brand's still around.
Yeah, they show their headquarters is Minnetonka, Minnesota. So it has not changed hands.
Got it. Okay, cool. That's good.
Okay.
It is. It's good to see the brand still out there and still somewhat connected with photography. It's kind of sad to see these brands, including Kodak, that are, you know, this, they're not innovating directly anymore. They're just, right. You know, it's a brand for other brands. And in the case of Polaroid, it's kind of down market stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but it, on the good side, I guess it's cheap. So you got that.
Right. Well, they never went anywhere with their, with that printing technology, you know, that was based on digital printing.
Yeah.
Where you could print out a picture from your phone.
That never really took off, yeah. Did it?
Well, because people aren't going to carry around a printer in their pocket with their phone. I mean, it's like, I don't care how small it is.
I do all the time.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. Well, what did you guys buy on Amazon Prime Day?
Nothing.
Nothing. I didn't either. Phil?
I did. Yeah, I actually did quite a bit of shopping.
So. Oh, you got another Echo.
No, I did not.
Okay. Right. Oh, really?
Definitely the price was worth it. It was down to, what, $129, I believe,
yes.
Was the Echo. And the Tap was on sale as well. And they're still waiting for the Dot to go on sale. But
really?
But yeah, I just decided, again, I look back on when we had it, and I was like, I just wasn't using it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I invested in things like, you know, just small things, like, you know, with our youngest daughter on her way to college, pick up a few things for her. You know, I bought some Bluetooth headphones because I started running again and you know, things like that. So nothing of great expense, but still.
Well, I spent my entire lunch hour on Prime Day going through everything and
everything.
Sorry. Electronics and computing mainly, right. And camera gear. But, I was looking at really what I really wanted was a nice leather iPad case for my iPad Pro, one that propped differently, you know, because the one I've got from Apple kind of sucks. It's thin, but and so I started looking at these leather ones, and of course, you know, Pad and Quill. I'd love to buy from Pad and Quill, but I'm not going to spend $125 on a leather iPad case.
It's fine, well, Corinthian leather.
It is they do beautiful. Oh my God. Do beautiful stuff, but and so I ended up looking at these various cases and then started reading the comments, and you know, the stuff for like $40 that are made in China or something.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, they look fine, all that, but then people were saying, well, yeah, you know, but the seams come apart and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm thinking, oh geez, so maybe I will go buy a Pad and Quill, because I ended up buying nothing that day.
Oh,
which was a surprise. So, but you know what? I got everything I need. I have more technology now. Just this new camera, this new Nikon D500. I mean, honest to God, I've spent several hours reading an ebook that I bought from this Nikon guru, Tom Hogan. And I have more technology to deal with than I don't need to buy more. Anyway, another huge story this past week. First we had, of course, Vladimir Putin signing that encryption bill that says, within about a week, all encryption in Russia has to be backdoored. And then the UK came out, the new Home Secretary said that the new Home Secretary will have powers to ban end-to-end encryption. So you think WhatsApp and Signal and all of that will be unable to be used in the UK. And now our good Senator John McCain from Arizona is pushing Apple and Google on encryption standards in this cyber hearing. And I just love the first paragraph that McCain warned Google and Apple executives Thursday that the Senate Armed Services Committee has subpoena power that could compel them to testify on why their encryption systems on newer smartphones are not accessible to law enforcement operating under court orders. You know, and I want to just stand there and just bitch slap the guy and say, hey, John, look, or hey, Senator, I would actually say, you need to understand that putting a back door in encryption systems means that you are essentially weakening encryption to the point where it's just not going to function. You know, if we put a back door in, somebody else can kick it in too.
Yep.
And it just, you know, I mean, it's like, that's why one of the things about these older senators like McCain is the fact that they just don't get it. Remember Ted, what's his name from Alaska, about the series of tubes?
Yeah.
He's talking about the internet. Everyone knows that. I mean, it's kind of what this is like. Well, we got to have a back door. Well, we want to be super secure, and the Department of Defense now has a cybersecurity arm that they're beefing up because they're weaponizing cyber stuff. So this is going to be real interesting to see how this all plays out, because I tell you what, Google and Apple, they're encrypting everything. So,
yep.
Anyway,
this is one more thing to worry about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So last but not least, I think we were kind of prescient last week with the Pokemon, mentioning the Pokemon Go thing. And then all of a sudden, because we recorded on Sunday, all of a sudden on Monday, it's like you can't. I mean, in my news feed, I probably had 30 articles that were Pokemon Go related. It was just like it exploded. So is there anything else that happened this past week that related to Pokemon Go?
Well, T-Mobile is giving away free data for a year. It makes you think about, I mean, how much data does Pokemon actually, you know, consume? Is it a lot of data?
I don't know. I don't know either.
But, it seems like a kind of a gimmick. They have been doing this for streaming services, and it's much to my chagrin, because I upgraded our family plan to, I think it's 20 gigs a line, and of course most of us use maybe 2 or 3 gigs, and my son uses about, you know, 25 gigs. So with data cache, it all works out. But he's mostly watching Netflix on the bus on his way to work, and listening to Spotify. And all of those are, you can do both unlimited. So I didn't really have to upgrade it. But anyway, it's the same kind of thing, but it's related to Pokemon Go. And I thought, well, geez, why would that be a big thing?
Huh.
I don't know. I think you're probably right.
I don't know.
More of a gimmick.
Well, it is more of a gimmick, but you know what? When I bought the new iPad Pro, I could make a choice of what wireless provider I went with. And
what'd you choose with?
I chose T-Mobile only because they had this deal that if you signed up, you could have you could have 5 gigs of data for $10, which expired at the end of August. And I thought, that's great. Well, I've only used 2 gigs out of the 5, so I got 3 gigs left over. And so I was looking at that, and I thought, well, now would I choose AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile? Well, clearly, I've done an A-B comparison between my iPhone on AT&T and the T-Mobile on the iPad, doing the same thing simultaneously, like playing a YouTube video or whatever, and also done speed tests in the same location with these devices next to each other. And there's no question that the AT&T LTE is faster than the T-Mobile. And I can't compare the Verizon because I don't have a Verizon device anymore. But, you know, for the price, if you did the 6 gigs, if you sign up for the 6 gigs, then you get the unlimited Netflix and other streaming. So even if it is a little bit slower, that's actually still pretty attractive.
Yep.
So I think I may stick with T-Mobile.
So did you guys see the Pokemon Go stats on this?
Just now, I just opened it. Where did you find this?
There's actually a couple of different places you can get different stats, but obviously most of it's going to be based on Android because, you know, Apple keeps everything fairly close to the
channel. Yeah.
But Pokemon Go daily active users. Now, this rolled out on the 6th of July, and this was updated on the 13th. 21 million daily active users.
My God.
10 million Android downloads. Percentage of Android devices in the U.S. that have Pokemon Go installed, 10%, which is huge. That's just amazing. Amount of Pokemon Go users spend in the app daily, 43 minutes.
Wow.
That's a lot of time.
Estimated amount that the revenue, $14 million.
Yeah,
and it's only been out 2 weeks. Exactly. Yeah. Wow,
isn't that amazing?
That's unbelievable. Amazing. Well, are we going to see BuzzFeed Go pretty soon?
No, I don't think so. But I was saying, you know, it's interesting because you were talking about, you know, all your feed being clogged up with Pokemon Go stories.
Yeah,
it was really interesting that I would probably say a good 7 or 8 stories in our top 10 trending on any given day last week were dedicated to Pokemon Go.
Unbelievable.
it is really interesting to see. Have you guys seen, have you actually been out to, you know, a park and seen the people just crowded into a park?
Well, and it was funny because I went to the one by our house that my son had stopped in after work, because I was just driving by and I thought, I'm just going to drive in and just park in the parking lot. And I parked in the parking lot. I look over and there's another guy that's next to me that's, you know, probably 45, got a shirt and tie on and all of that. And you see him, and then you see two guys walk over to his car and start talking to him. And then pretty soon a guy walks over to my car and starts talking to me about, you know, what he's captured. And I go, you know, what level are you? And I go, like 0.5. I don't know. Cause I just, you know, I haven't really been investing in it, but
I have
but it was fun.
A neighbor who is a wheel over at Dakota Electric. And he said that they've had to post into, you know, all their social media accounts that stay out of electric substations.
Oh my God.
Because people are climbing fences and
seriously,
I mean, there's a lot of electricity in a substation, and people are worried that it's going to happen. Well, I just saw a post, I don't know, pop up in the news feed that 4 teenagers found themselves lost in a cave while they were playing Pokemon Go. So,
oh brother,
it's yeah.
Well, you know what? I just got.
Well, come on, Tim. A lot of these kids haven't been out of their basement in quite some
time. Yeah. But that's actually good. I mean, in all seriousness, that's
get really off good. My lawn. Well, yeah, kid.
Well, you know, it's always bothered me when you know, my wife and I have been walking out. It's a beautiful summer night, and there are no kids outside. And I just remember being a kid, and literally, I remember my sister and I fighting, doing the dishes, because I thought she was too slow, and she thought that I wasn't drying them properly. And we'd fight because both of us wanted to get outside, because everybody was outside. Yeah. What, washing dishes by hand? Well, hey, one more thing about this Pokemon Go stat.
Yeah.
Amount, Nintendo's market value increased the first 5 days after Pokemon Go's launch, $9 billion.
Yes.
Yep.
In market cap. Oh, my God. That's unbelievable. Well, anyway, now we should talk.
App, right?
What?
A power of a great app, right?
Oh, my God.
Whew.
Yep. Well, I'm glad it's putting augmented reality on.
Well, you know, that's the thing that I'm really interested in learning more and more about is you know, the game. Yes, it's an interesting sort of a thing. I'm just really interested in the tech and, what drives where things are placed and where things pop up, drives the popularity. Like I said, I mean, I was in my office, sitting at my desk and not really having to go anywhere to catch a lot of Pokemon. And then, you know, people are talking about how they got to wander around. So what's the difference between, what places show up and what don't. So it's a very interesting, the technology is very interesting. So yes, AR is, and it's good to see that happening. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry about that.
Cool thing of the week.
Okay.
What do we have for cool things of the week? Tim,
well, I'm sorry.
No, you go. Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, because you never lead with me. But
we love you, Phil.
This one just actually popped up in my Facebook feed. I have some friends that are musicians and things like that. And I found this fascinating. This is a wireless MIDI controller for acoustic guitar. Take a look at this. It was just successfully funded on Kickstarter. So again, I've broken my rule of actually talking about something that doesn't necessarily exist yet. But this is a MIDI that basically is a pad that, a very thin layer that adheres to the front of an acoustic guitar.
Interesting.
And allows you to play multiple instruments and percussion. And the guy they have demoing it, obviously a brilliant guitar player, but it was really interesting to see. So you got to check it out. It's Acapad. Is it Acapad or ACPAD?
Acpad. A-C-P-A-D.
Acpad.
Acpad.
Something like that.
Yeah, we'll have a link obviously in the show notes, and people can watch the video.
Yeah,
which I will after we get off the show here.
Yeah, it's a very interesting piece of tech.
Huh.
And again, it just adheres to your guitar body.
Yeah, Mr. Tim.
Well, our friends at Nintendo are coming out with the NES Classic Edition in November. It's basically a smaller version of the classic NES from years gone by, and it comes with 30 of their best games from that platform, All for $59.99. I predict this will be a huge
thing that's for the holidays. That is brilliant.
It's a brilliant idea, and I think we're going to see the SNES Classic Edition the year after, and so forth until they get through their all of their old ones.
Oh my God!
But it's a great idea.
You know, my son's been looking for there's an emulator for the Nintendo, and he goes, yeah, but you know, Dad, then I got to shut down the Mac and boot into Windows, and because he's got Windows on his laptop, and he goes, this is such a pain. He would buy this in a nanosecond.
Yep,
that's
right. Does your son know you talk about him a lot on the podcast?
Yeah, he thinks I'm lame, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Gotta go.
That goes without saying, Steve, because you are lame. No, I'm sorry.
That's right. Well, my cool thing is cool because I'm the family photo archivist, and I've done a billion photos scanned and all kinds of stuff, and I really, really, really appreciate what it takes to scan a photo at decent resolution, to clean it up, and make it into a digital file, right? So each image that I scan, I'll do like, you know, six at a time on my flatbed scanner. But then to bring them in and crop each one and manipulate each one and get it all ready and yada, 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 that whole process takes roughly 4 minutes an image. And I right now have bins from my dad's house with tintypes and all kinds of other photos, but there's about 2,200 photos. And I've looked at that and said, you know what? I don't have a month of full 8-hour days to scan. So I started looking at scanning services. The one that came out best was one called Scan Cafe in San Francisco. And I was almost ready to ship out some of the photos, do it in batches. And I discovered they turn around and ship them to India. And that's how they get their 39 cents an image price point. Mm-hmm. So I was really, really pleased because I know so many people that have asked me for advice on where to get their photos scanned, right? Because they're not going to go buy a scanner and they don't know how to do it and they don't know Photoshop and blah, blah, blah. And I looked at this best photo scanning service on Wirecutter, and their best service was one based in Minneapolis called Memories Renewed. And I went and looked at them, and they'll do images. Now they have price breaks, but it's about 60 cents an image. And you might say, well, geez, that's a lot. But I will tell you that you don't have to ship them off. You know, there's somebody right here. You can drive them up there. And they also do photo restorations, and they do slide scanning and negative. They'll transfer audios. They'll do 8mm and 16mm films and videotapes. And
this should earn you a discount of some kind, don't you think?
Hey, I should maybe pitch them. It is a plug. But I'm going to do a blog post about this because I've done other things about photo scanning. But
perhaps you should offer to redo their website for them and in trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've got a fine site.
Oh, it's a piece of crap.
It looks okay.
Okay. It's okay.
It looks like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Right. From years gone by. Where the heck is Spring Lake Park, though?
It's north of Columbia Heights, so up on I think it's on Highway 10.
Not familiar with that
area.
Borough.
Yeah, it's like the Lakeville of the North.
That borough.
Lakeville of the North. Lakeville.
Yeah, not quite as far.
Call it Lakeville de Nord.
That's right. Well, are there any events going on, kids, that we haven't talked about? Yeah. We've talked about them all.
I realized that I should probably put it in a show notes. The BuzzFeed office is hosting Product Tank, which is a product manager.
Yep.
Project directors meetup. So that's happening on, I believe, Tuesday night. I will double check.
Yeah, put that in there. Okay. So, that's great.
Yeah. So I'm sure that will transpire. That'll be interesting. But all sorts of things happening. We'll find out what's going on with Pokemon next week, too, on
the Minovate Gang podcast. Take care, guys. Good.